So welcome, everybody, to the CA Service Sponsorship Group presentation, a speaker workshop on carrying the message, not the wreckage. My name's Cameron. I am a member of Cocaine Anonymous, and we're going to get right into it. I've been a member of Cocaine Anonymous. My sobriety date is November 21st, 2003. As a speaker and a facilitator of 12-step recovery, I've spoken to numerous AA and CA groups, as well as a few NAs, and I've spoken in Al-Anon and CODA and some of the SLAA and SA fellowships over the years. I've spoken at group meetings, district roundups, area conventions, world conventions. I've spoken to audience all across the United States, the UK, Europe. I've spoken on topics such as 12 steps, 12 traditions, 12 concepts. I have, prior to my recovery years, coached audiences on how to be better keynote speakers, including overcoming the fears of speaking, structuring your talk, dynamics for excellent presentations, powerful openings and closings, key messaging, etc. And it is my hope that the CA Service Sponsorship presentation will prove so helpful to those of you who wish to carry a hopeful message to those who still suffer from addiction in and across the rooms of 12-step recovery. You know, my take-home message for all of you today is you're all going to be circuit speakers. Come join me on the circuit. It's a lot of fun out there traveling around the world, carrying a message to various groups and conventions. And I really encourage it, and come join me. Being invited to speak, whether, you know, it's, you know, you go to a topic meeting and you're asked to speak on a topic, or perhaps you're, you know, you're the chair and you have to qualify as the speaker. And it's a privilege to be able to carry a message and connect to the group or the roundup or the district or the, you know, whatever event that you're speaking at. One of the things that I find, and I believe, each individual in their personal stories describe in their own language and from their own point of view, the way they establish their relationship with God. And it is through this process and this message that we clear the ground a bit. And it's through our testimony. It's through our testimony when we share in a room that sweeps away the prejudice, and a person resonates and thinks, you know what, you know, I too might have a shot at recovery. I believe that, you know, there's a real case for speaking. So for those of you that tend to shy away from speaking, there's a real case for being a speaker in a 12-step room. Every addict has a story. I believe every addict has a particular story. And somewhere in the fellowship, somewhere in that room, there is an ear that desperately needs to hear your message, your story. And it's vital to our fellowship. You know, as an ex-problem addict that's speaking, that carries weight. That's a compelling picture to someone who wants to stop but can't stop. And yet in your carrying the message, they realize, hey, you're an ex-problem addict. And a good share will identify with those who struggle with addiction, and they will in turn identify with you. And the ultimate conclusion is, hey, I'm like you and you're like me, but you don't do it anymore. How is that possible? And you certainly have my attention now. And then by sharing what happened and what we are like today, the newcomer comes to believe that there is hope, that they too can escape their difficulties, and we win the newcomer's confidence. We must be careful, however, in our stories, not to drift into worry, remorse, morbid reflection. Why? Because it diminishes our usefulness to others. And when you're invited to speak at a meeting or at a roundup or a convention, what we don't want to do is overplay our hand and do this.
You talk too much, you worry me to death. You talk too much, you even worry my pet. You just talk too much.
Far too often I've gone to hear a speaker and we hear the long-winded drunkologues, the war stories, junkie pride tales, even ramblings and incoherent thoughts and the minutiae of one's life at the podium. I always know I'm in for one of those long, tiresome speaker shares, those drunkalogues, when the speaker in AA opens up with, "I remember my first drink. I was in my mother's third trimester, and I realized I didn't drink like other fetuses. And I think, oh God, here we go," right? And it's 40, 45 minutes of drinking tales. And some speakers, you know, they don't know when to shut up. There comes a point in your presentation where it's done, you shut up. And some speakers never know when to stop. Many times I've heard a speaker share, and just when I think they're finally concluding their message, they digress into another stream of consciousness, and it goes on and on ad nauseum. So know when to wrap it up, because you don't want to leave your audience with the feeling that you're talking too much. What we're going to accomplish today over the next, it'll be about 90 minutes in total for this presentation. You're going to learn 10 strategies for overcoming the fear of speaking in front of an audience. You know, there's a lot of intrepidation, a lot of butterflies, a lot of, oh my God, can I really do this? And we're going to look at 10 strategies for overcoming that. We're going to list five ways. You'll be able to list five ways to conduct yourself when speaking virtually and in person. And there's a difference between those two mediums when you're presenting. You identify three major benefits of speaking to a 12-step meeting or an event. List three key elements for a compelling story. Identify three ways to win the newcomer's confidence. Know three essential components for a well-structured story. Learn three ways to dynamically open your share. And four ways to identify and connect with your audience. You'll learn how to identify five important ways to describe what happened in your story, three ways to inspire others to work their program, and learn three approaches to dynamically closing your talk. Now, before we get into it, I do want to mention this workshop is free. It's we do have a seventh tradition, and if you find that the content of this presentation is valuable and useful, please consider making a donation to our website. It helps to offset our Zoom costs, our website costs, and our needs are pretty simple: an app to host our meeting, which we use Zoom, and our website to carry the group's message. And we ask those of you that can give generously, a donation of 20, 10, or 5, or whatever you can afford, can go a long way into ensuring this workshop continues. And you can make a seventh donation at our website, caservicesponsorship.org. One of the co-hosts will put the link in the chat, and we really appreciate your generosity. And we use PayPal for our donations. So thank you. Okay. So the fear of public speaking, it affects 1 in 4 of the general public. So what are we really afraid of when we go to the front of the room? And why do we have this fear? So I'd like to get some, I'm just going to take the share off here for a moment and just open it up for those of you who like to weigh in. Just raise your virtual hand. What kind of fears do we have when we go to the front of the room? What's that intrepidation all about? What are your thoughts? Go ahead, Lynette. Oh, hang on, Lynette. Let me give you the ability to unmute yourself. Go ahead, Lynette.
Hi, so happy to be here. I just happened to catch this, so I'm like, yay. My fear that comes up is being like harshly judged, because right. I know I'm fear of being judged, because I know I've judged people in the past. So that's what comes up for me.
Thanks, Lynette. Yeah, that's a very valid concern. What are they going to think of me? What are they going to think of my story? Is it any good? You know, good. Thank you. Yes, Joanne.
Hi, what always trips me up is that I'm not an eloquent enough speaker, and I do have, like, you know, my thoughts are going all over the place sometimes, and like, oh, I'm going to forget this and I'm going to forget that. And even if I write it down, I'm not going to have enough time to say it all. And I say too much anyway. So this workshop's going to be perfect for me.
Thanks, Joanne. Thank you. Yeah, you know, can I articulate an interesting message? And God help me if I forget I have a mental blank spot at the podium and I lose my spot and I don't know what I was supposed to say next and I'm flustered. It can be, you know, it can be a bit of a nightmare at the front of the room. So thank you. Is that pronounced Mika?
Yes, that is very well. Yes, thank you. For me, it's very unconscious, in fact. It's not in my head. I feel like I will do good and I have something to say, but it's my body. It goes in my body, my heart, blah, blah, blah. And then my blood pressure goes up and I can't stop it. I can't control it. It's very unconscious.
Yeah. Yeah, sometimes, you know, we're going to do, I remember doing a share. This is when I was doing corporate keynotes back in the 90s. And I was asked to speak to a group of bankers. And I lost my nerve. I hit, the fear came up. What earns me the right to speak to these people? What could I possibly share? And my body was reacting and I couldn't control it. It was just awful. My guts were turning inside out. I'm profusely sweating and I'm stuttering and oh my God, it was a real disaster. And they paid me a lot of money to do that. And it was one of my big failures early on in my speaking career. So yeah, I get it. It's kind of frustrating when the body reacts and there's not much we can do about it. So thank you. Yes, Ralph.
Yes. One of the things that comes to mind to me is part of my past can be really scary. How do I present that without scaring people off and being able to present the message how resentment and obsession of the mind can be a dangerous playground?
Yeah, that's a good point. We'll talk a little about that. You know, what do we put into a war story that identifies with the audience without scaring them or not being able to connect the audience where they go, hey, that's not me. I'm not like that. Oh my God, if that's what it means to be an addict, I'm not an addict. So that's a good point and you know, something that we need to address, and we're going to address that. Kirsty, go ahead.
Hi, Kirsty Addict. Thank you for the meeting. So I get so much fear, even when I get asked to speak, before it even comes up, just like, and I think it's self-centered, false pride fear. But then I have this overwhelming fear when it comes to the day or the moment, like, that I'm going to get it wrong, that I'm not going to deliver a message. And because it's life or death, and I just, that fear then overtakes me that I'm going to get it wrong and it could kill someone.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, how am I going to look? What if I look badly or I can't remember or I screw it up and I get so focused on me and how I'm going to look and sound. And whenever I have that focus, when I go to the podium, if I'm in that kind of a focus, it's not going to turn out well. And there's a way to overcome that we're going to address. So thank you. Grateful Kim.
Cameron, thank you very much for all your service and all you do for us. Greatly appreciate it. Thank you very much. Blessings to you. Similar to the last two shares, I'm afraid that I will discourage someone who is in the fellowship rather than encourage them. I'm afraid that something will trigger and they will doubt their ability to do it. So I fear of being discouraging rather than encouraging by what I share.
Great. Yeah. You know, and one of the things I find really discouraging is when I go to a room and I'm not hearing the good news. All I'm hearing is morbid reflection, bad news, war stories. And it's like, oh, my God, like, you know, why am I here? This is not what, you know, I just want to put a bullet in my brain. So, yes, there's a way we can share a story that's encouraging and inspiring and you know, get them, hey, I want to do this deal too. So thank you. Three more. We'll wrap up with Miguel. Lauren, you're next.
Thank you. The judgment. And then like, if say, for example, someone talks about that they're spouse cheat on them, but then I was involved in cheating. So it triggers them. But also the big thing is like kind of being seen or stared at and examined, like people sexualizing me or imagining me being sexual, you know, just, yeah. So.
Yeah, that was- I get it. Happens to me all the time. thank you. Yes. And there are things we can do to minimize that without, you know, downplaying it too. So we'll address that soon. Kelly, go ahead.
Hi. My question is about outside help, mental health. I have mental health problems and I do a lot of speaking, but I always wonder how much or how little to share about the other issues in my life that have come to light and been huge and instrumental in my recovery.
That's a good question. You know, when I'm sponsoring, I certainly address this in step five, where I talk about properly appointed authorities, you know, for mental, emotional issues, it's a therapist, criminal matters, a lawyer, you know, financial matters, maybe your debt counselor or your tax lawyer. Medical issues is your doctor. And of course, we as sponsors, we're on the level of the priest. We're spiritual moral advisors. We hear a spiritual moral inventory. But in telling our story, we can certainly address that because there are a lot of people in the audience that are dealing with perhaps mental, emotional trauma from their childhood, or maybe succumbing to insolvency and a burdening debt, and what should they do? And, you know, far too often, you know, we get a speaker or a sponsor, worse yet, who wants to play junior lawyer, junior therapist, junior, you know, doctor. And that's really not what our message is all about. There are other authorities for dealing with that. So that's a good question. Miguel, we're going to wrap up with you.
Hi, Cameron. Hi, everyone. I guess, so this question is sort of more like, I guess it's just me. And but like, how do I you know, I want to impress people. I want to sound intelligent. I want to be funny and all these different things, right? So I guess it's basically like, just how do I get out of my own head when I'm speaking, you know?
Yeah, good. That's a good question. And we're going to look at that. And yeah, we all want to be impressive and funny and entertaining. And oh, my God, you know, that was the best speaker I ever heard, sort of, you know, feedback. You know, we all like that. I think sometimes some people try too hard at it, or the emphasis goes towards entertaining rather than carrying a message. I remember when I was speaking, I used to say outrageous things at the front of the room. And what happened was people started to come, not so much to hear my message of recovery, but to hear what outrageous thing Cameron would say next. And I'm not here as an entertainer. What's the scene in Goodfellas? Do you think I'm some sort of clown? Is that what I'm here to do? You know, that's really not what we're here to convey. So that's a good point to bring up. All right, we're gonna move on here. So, do you know what most people are afraid of? Spiders and snakes. That's what most people are afraid of. Some of you in the room might be afraid of spiders and snakes. And according to a 2022 poll, 1 in 3 North Americans have some fear of snakes, and 1 in 4 Americans have a fear of spiders. You know, when my son was a teenager, my son's 39, he used to breed snakes and mix genetic patterns to get different colors. And we always had a house full of snakes. And now he's breeding tarantulas. My God, my son. Anyhow, spiders and snakes. So how do we overcome our fear of public speaking? Give a presentation on spiders and snakes. I throw the strategy of overcoming one's fears of spiders and snakes as a bonus. Levity, it's one of my favorite spiritual principles. Okay. 10 strategies for overcoming the fear of public speaking. Okay. Number one, structure your presentation. Avoid stream of consciousness sharing. You know, so often I hear speakers, they go to the podium with no idea what they're going to say. You know, often they go up the podium and they actually say it. I have no idea what I'm going to say. They just start talking about whatever stream of consciousness comes on their into their mind in that given moment. And this can be a problem when trying to carry a message to those that need to hear, your story in an effective way. And the problem with stream of consciousness is that sometimes it's a really great share. Oh my God, that was an incredible share. But when the and they give the speaker that feedback, the speaker has no idea what they've said because it's all just blurted out and they have no way of duplicating it. Or on the other side of it, they do a share that's just a disaster. And once again, they don't know what they did or said that created the disaster. So I'm a big proponent of structuring your presentation so that you give some mindful thought to what key messages you want to convey in your story. And through structuring it, we can actually duplicate our presentation again and again and again. So by writing down, and this is number two, write your presentation down. Use your own words. Avoid jargon. Avoid vulgar language. I remember I did a share for AA earlier on when I first started speaking, and I opened with a very vulgar way of identifying. And I remember at the end of the presentation, this woman comes up to me and she said, "Cameron," she says, "you've got a good message, but you have a filthy mouth." And it hit me really hard that all people are going to remember from that share is how foul and vulgar I was in telling my story. And that misses the point. So, you know, occasionally you might use the odd vulgarity, but it's something to be used very minimally. And you want to avoid jargon. Here in Toronto, Ontario, there was a group of big book thumpers called the Muckers. And they took the passage out of the big book where it talked about the moderate drinker, the heavy drinker, and the real alcoholic. And they called them types 1, 2, and 3. And so when they would speak and tell their story, they'd talk about, "Well, I'm a type 3 alcoholic." And people in the audience are going, "Type 3? What's a type 3? And I'm not a type 2. You know, those type 2s, they don't need to come to the meeting." And people are saying, "What's a type 2? So jargon only works if you define your terms. If you're going to use jargon, at least give the audience the benefit of defining what the jargon means. But to just, you know, tell your story in jargon without definition will leave your audience baffled as to what it is that you're trying to say. And lastly, rehearse your presentation. Practice. You know, practice your presentation. You know, you get a lot of different options and opportunities to carry your message. Like you go to a meeting and let's say it goes around the room for people to share. Some meetings you can share wherever you're at. Some meetings have a specific topic. This is an opportunity to try out your material. Put out a bite-sized piece of your presentation. See how the audience responds to it. There's lots of opportunities to practice your presentation. Okay. So number four, before speaking, take time for prayer and meditation. Often when I'm invited to speak, like I'll be going to a presentation tomorrow night. It's a large AA meeting. I'm going with a buddy of mine. We'll probably grab some dinner before the meeting. But before I go to the front of the room, you know, I'll take time. I'll get myself centered. I'll do a prayer. I'll ask God help me to, you know, use the right words, the right tones, the right stories that I might reach this audience. And I get centered and I center my body. I make sure I do my bathroom break and some, you know, wash my face and whatever. And I prepare to go to the podium. So I find it very useful before speaking to take time for prayer and meditation. And if there is some apprehension or some fear, there's a great prayer in the big book. Instead, we let God demonstrate through us what it can do. We ask God to remove our fear and direct our attention to what it would have us be. And at once we commence to outgrow fear. So you want to be relaxed. You know, you get yourself, you relax your body, you calm your emotions, take some deep breaths, still your mind. Sometimes it's great to visualize your performance, build it clearly in your mind. You know, I know what I pretty much know what I'm going to say. Although when I present, you know, I know the messages I want to convey, and each time it's not exactly the same. I can mix it up, but I know what I'm going to say, and I clearly have my presentation already in my mind built. So when I go to the podium, I'm just simply executing. When speaking, focus on your audience. Most importantly, focus on carrying the message to the newcomer. As one of the participants mentioned early on, you know, when I focus on myself, I get worried. Am I going to look good? Am I going to say the right things? You know, what's the audience going to think of me? Are they judging me? And if I go up to the podium with that focus, man, it really can disrupt the way I want to present the message. So I focus on the audience. When I used to focus on me, it was always, I never liked speaking. But now when I go to the podium, I'm focused on the newcomer of carrying a message to the person in that room that's suffering and give them the hope and the faith and the courage that there's a way out of their difficulties. I'm there to present the good news to that individual or individuals. And when I take that focus, I begin to have a lot of fun at the podium. It's a lot of fun being at the front of the room and carrying a message and engaging with your audience. And that really comes about when I'm focused on the newcomer. I take the focus off me and I put it on them. Another great thing you can do is to record yourself. You know, our smartphones are excellent recorders. And I did a share in 2008. Some of you may have heard it. It's got a baby crying in the background. I was asked to speak at a CA meeting in St. Catharines. So I took my, in those days, it was a pocket recorder. And when I went to the podium, I hit the pocket recorder on and I did my talk and I recorded myself. And when I listened to it afterwards, you know, I thought this was a really good share. And so at the time, the hub of all 12-step speakers was a website called xa-speakers.org. It was an Icelandic operation. And I called up XA Speakers, and I remember saying to one of their staff, I said, I just heard the most incredible speaker. You got to get this guy's MP3 on your platform. And they said, well, send it to us. So I sent my MP3 off. They posted it. 17,000 downloads later and invitations all over the world to speak. Now, I admit it was a little bit of promotion. But, you know, there's a lot of value in recording your presentation, because when you listen to it afterwards, you get a hit of what's working, what's not working, a turn of a phrase that you said that you really liked or something you said that you didn't like the way you put it across. And this is the value behind recording your presentation and getting your own feedback to yourself when you listen to the share, and you can make notes and you can revise your share accordingly. Okay. Where am I in my presentation here? Okay. Number 8, remember you never have a more accepting and forgiving audience. You know, that's something to always bear in mind, you know, especially when dealing, am I going to be judged? Are they going to like me? You know, you could go to the podium and just go blah, 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 blah for 20 minutes. And I guarantee you, they're going to clap just the same at the end of it. You'll never have a more forgiving audience than a 12-step audience. They want to see you do well. They want to hear you. They're cheering you on. So, you know, remember to have some fun with them, and remember they are an accepting and forgiving audience. Number 9, share from the I perspective, avoiding using you language. No, you language can come across as self-righteous or preachy. You need to do this and you need to do that. And if you don't do this, you're going to get that. You know, and we sometimes speakers will talk like that and it sounds very preachy. Occasionally I use we language to be inclusive, but mostly I talk about I did this, I did that, this is what I experienced. And what's great about that approach is it's yours. No one can take it from you. It's your story. You're speaking from the I perspective. Nobody can take that from you. And as I said, with the you language, it can sometimes be a little preachier, self-righteous, and that can turn your audience off. But when you speak from the I perspective, it's yours. Nobody can argue with it. All right. 5 ways to conduct yourself when speaking virtually in person. Now, there are similarities between the two mediums, but there is some differences too. Like we're speaking virtually today here. So before I came on and set up the presentation, you know, I take a look at myself. Am I dressed appropriately? Is my camera positioned properly? You don't want your camera virtually to be, you know, so up close that it's disconcerting, or the camera's turned in a way that people can see up your nose, or it's turned in a way that they can see your bald spot on your head. That's why I'm wearing a hat. And women, you know, attention to makeup. If you do the makeup thing, and you know, they're my wife's a keynote speaker. She discovered Zoom's face softener. You can actually set Zoom to soften your face. She's in love with that feature. She just thinks it's the greatest thing going when she has to do a virtual presentation. So there are things we can do with the Zoom platform that makes us, you know, a presentable. We don't want to be hideous in front of the camera. When you're speaking virtually, I like to sit. I sit comfortably in my chair. I don't stand. I focus on the camera and I make eye contact with the camera. And sometimes, like in this presentation, because I'm working with a slideshow, I only get to see so much of the audience on my right side of the screen. But when I'm speaking to an audience and I have the full grid in front of me, sometimes I look for someone in the room that's laughing or engaged with my presentation, and I'll talk to that person directly on the Zoom camera. And you get this feedback when people respond favorably to what you're saying. It's nice to see that and get acknowledged and acknowledge that. Use a laptop or a desktop computer rather than your phone if you're speaking. Make sure your screen's tilted correctly. Like I say, you don't want to see your nostrils at the top of your head. Watch the facial expressions of your audience's grid. And if they're engaged, are they smiling? Are they laughing? Are they nodding their heads? Are they listening? Right? And smile and speak clearly and modulate your tempo for emphasis. I love the virtual platform. Mostly because I can do a lot with Zoom. As for those of you that logged in early, you know, we're playing music, and you know, there's things we can do with the Zoom platform, like presenting a slideshow. It's a little more daunting to do it in live meetings. In person live meetings, be well groomed. Now nowadays it's a lot more informal. You know, in AA, you tend to suit up. They don't really require a very, very formal meeting, might require a suit and tie. Tomorrow, I'll go to this meeting. I'll be in a sports jacket, nice shirt, nice slacks, and, you know, and groomed appropriately. When I speak in a live meeting, I stand in one place. I plant my feet firmly on the ground. If there's a podium, that can sometimes be your anchor point, but sometimes there's no podium, there's just a mic, so I just plant my feet. I don't want to be walking back and forth on the stage. Now there is a style of facilitation that does that. What was his name? I can't remember his name, but he had a style where he did that kind of walking back and forth in a dynamic way. But generally I find stand in one place and present yourself in front of your audience. When I speak live, I'll focus on people in the audience. I'll talk to this person maybe in the front row. Then I'll move over to the other side of the room and speak to someone a couple rows back, speak to a person at the back of the room. But I pick someone and I talk to them for a few moments, make eye contact, and then I move on to someone else in the audience. And I try to engage with the audience. You know, it's really magical when you connect with your audience and you're facilitating or presenting and people are laughing and they're acknowledging you and they're getting, and you get into what, you get into a rapport with your audience. You feed the audience and the audience is feeding you. And for those of you who've done live presentations and been privy to that kind of experience, it really is a magical thing to be a part of when you're presenting at the front of the room. If there's no mic present, project your voice like you're talking to the back of the room. Some people go to the podium and they speak in a really low voice, and a lot of people can't hear it. Say it loud, say it proud, you know, modulate your voice, speak as if the whole room can hear it. If there's a mic, you know, that really helps, especially with large audiences. Take note of your audience's engagement, just like on Zoom. Take note. Is your audience engaged with you? Are they smiling? Are they laughing? Are they nodding their heads? And again, smile, speak clearly, modulate your tempo for emphasis. Also, you know, a note on dress. Dress for success. You know, I feel different when I'm dressed up. Like today, you know, I got nice slacks on. I got my my tweed jacket on. I love tweed. And, you know, it changes my persona when I'm speaking. So, you know, dress for success, dress to be successful. And it's fun, too. We did when I did the workshop on New Year's Eve, I was in a tuxedo. That was a lot of fun to present in a tuxedo. Okay, three benefits of speaking. Number one, it fulfills tradition five. Our whole point, everything we do in our fellowship, regardless of what fellowship you're in, everything we do at the group level, at the district level, the area level, at the world level, all the pomp and circumstances of things going on is all designed to do one thing. And that's to carry the message of our hope, faith, and courage, or experience, strength, and hope to the addict who still suffers. That's the whole point of all of it. That's always our main purpose. And being a speaker, speaking, standing up and sharing your story, your words of good news that there's a way out of the hole, out of their predicament, is in fulfilling that we have a message to the person that suffers that there is a way out of their predicament. You know, our job is to be of maximum service to God and our fellows. Meetings should be about the solution, a pep rally for the spiritual way of life. And let's communicate that. There is a solution. There is a solution. That's the good news. Three benefits of speaking. Number two, when we speak, there's something that goes on when we share our story. And I'm going to try not to get too academic here. When I went to back to university in my 50s, there's a line in the big book that says, go out and see what other religious people are doing. So I thought, well, I'll go get a degree. So I was taking medical anthropology and religions. Medical anthropology is the study of humans and their healing systems. And 12 steps is definitely an alternative healing system. And I also majored in religions. Well, one of my professors had done a longitudinal study. She had done this study in Food Addicts Anonymous. And she looked at the narratives that people shared in their stories. And she found, like most 12-step programs, there were two genres of narrative. And that is the recovered addict versus the recovering addict narrative. Now, I bring this up because it is important, not only in terms of a message, but it does have a direct bearing on our sobriety. So the recovered addict versus the recovering addict narrative, they found recovery stories are consequential for a person's experience of recovery. Since it seems, and this is what they found in the study, the telling and retelling of an empowered, recovered narrative with its clear beginnings, its turning point, and favorable results of the program may well be critical for stable and consistent recovery. Such narration articulates but also facilitates the member's consistent affiliation with and appropriation of the 12-step master narratives. What that means is that those that spoke as a recovered addict with their the old life was done and gone with, there was a delineated boundary with this new life they've been reborn into, and the telling and retelling of that identity as a member of their fellowship had a reinforcing dynamic where they showed consistent sobriety rates. Now, alternatively, those that shared the telling and retelling of an ambiguous, always recovering narrative, which in my opinion perpetuates the illness. It mentions 16 times in your big book of Alcoholics Anonymous, we have recovered from a seemingly hopeless state of mind and body. What they found in the study is the addict who told the always recovering story, they were never well, they're only an arm's length away from the next drink. They would question the spiritual principles. They pondered these hypothetical life paths that they never actually pursued. And they envisioned both abstinence as good and bad. There were good things about being absent. There was a lot of things they didn't like about being abstinent. And what they found is it perpetuated a cycle of relapse. This group of narratives couldn't maintain permanent recovery. So how we share our story, how we identify in terms of the outcomes of our recovery and why it's so amazing to be a part of this fellowship actually can play a bearing and dynamic on your consistent abstinency and recovery. Again, not trying to get too academic, but I really want to enforce this point, the magic of speaking. You know, central to the 12-step recovery culture is the personal story of the recovered addict. It all hinges on one alcoholic or one addict working with another. And our stories disclose, as it says in our big book, in a general way, what we used to be like, what happened, what we're like now. And a member's personal story reinforces that figured world of 12-step recovery. The narratives maintain the boundaries that structure and empower the 12-step recovery culture. And by sharing our personal stories of what we used to be like, members identify as addicts or alcoholics or whatever it may be. Their war story conveys an important criteria for potential members to identify and label themselves as addicts. Furthermore, these personal testimonies were significant to the newcomers because the storylines of recovered addicts objectify the central cultural elements of our 12-step world, of our 12-step fellowship, our community, such as the importance of attending meetings, getting a sponsor, helping other suffering addicts, doing service work for the 12-step group. And it's by listening to these narratives of recovered members, newcomers learn the culture of 12 steps. The newcomer learns a model of the 12-step testimonial by listening to other members, and through the telling of their own story, the newcomer comes to understand their own life as a member of a 12-step program. And this rhetorical language provides an attractive element that connects the newcomer to the 12-step culture and assures them that their drinking, using, or acting out problem can be solved, resulting in behavioral transformation of the newcomer. And, you know, there's been an interesting thing happening in 12-step culture. When I first came in, it was war stories, long-winded war stories, 20 minutes, 30 minutes, 40 minutes, 60-minute war stories, all about the horrendous horrors of it. And that seemed to be the prolific way, the most common way that members would share their story. And part of that is, because everybody else is doing it. And so it got reinforced and reinforced. Now, lately, thank God to people like Joe and Charlie in the 1980s and the Muckers in Toronto and primary purpose groups out of Texas with Chris R. and Mark Houston and those types of people, Back to Basics by Wally P., there's been a return to the original big book narrative. And now we hear more and more big book solution-focused narratives being shared in our rooms. And, you know, I often think sometimes I go to a meeting, they say 20 minutes for a talk. And I go, you know, it's hard to carry a message in 20 minutes. And I think partly that's been a bit of a rebut to these long-winded war stories. You know, groups started to cut down the sharing time because they didn't want to hear 45 minutes of a belabored war story. But that narrative has been shifting over the last 20, 30 years, and we're seeing a lot more solution-focused, good news stories being shared in the rooms of 12 steps. And again, it's, you know, it's basically monkey see, monkey do, right? If all a newcomer hears is belabored war story and pissing and moaning and Oprah Winefest, they begin to think that's what the 12-step program is about. Hollywood makes fun of us. You ever seen Hollywood's depiction of a AA meeting? You see a circle of people with despondent looks on their faces. They don't want to be there. And then the sharing is problem, 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 right? And it's almost a stigma. But that's not really what the meeting rooms are all about. And our stories really have the power to shift the culture and the message of our program to that of hope, faith, and courage. Another benefit of speaking is Bill W. realized in order to save himself, he must carry the message to another alcoholic addict. It's important for the newcomer to realize that your attempt to pass our message of experience, strength, and hope onto them plays a vital part in our recovery. Actually, the newcomer's helping us more than we're helping them. It's really not a selfish program. I hear this a lot in the rooms. Oh, this is a selfish program. I got to work on me first. And those people I never see stick around very long. It's not a selfish program. When I focused more on carrying the message to the addict still suffers, and that was my focus, giving of myself unconditionally in my messaging that there is a way out of their predicament. My sobriety was always taken care of out of left field. But my focus was always on the newcomer to be of maximum service to God and our fellow human beings. And every time I speak, every time I carry a message, whether I'm sponsoring one-on-one or delivering a keynote or a workshop, I'm always learning something new about myself. I'm learning something new about newcomers. I'm learning something new about the program. It just keeps on giving. And I've been at it 20 years. And my enthusiasm for 12-step is at a 20-year high. I've never lost it. I've been on this pink cloud for 20 years. God's grace has just, you know, manifested on a regular basis. It really is a magical way to live one's life, you know, being of help to those that are suffering. Okay. Three key elements for a compelling story. So we have structure. How do we structure our story? Our story is disclosed in a general way. What we were like, what we used to be like. That's an important distinction. So often I hear what it was like, but what we used to be like, what happened, what we're like now. And then there's the substance of our story. The message, which can interest and hold these addictive people, have to have some depth and weight to it. And then the outcome, we believe that only by fully disclosing ourselves and our problems, the newcomers persuaded to say, yes, I am one of them. I must have this thing too, right? I must have this recipe for recovery. And so our stories, you know, we clearly have these delineated boundaries between the old self and the new self. And, you know, the depths and weight. I remember I got a call from somebody with a cocaine problem. The person said, Cameron, my girlfriend thinks I have a cocaine problem. I said, really? Well, tell me a bit about that. Well, I pick up a gram of coke. I'll do a few lines. I'll put it away. And then next week I'll do a few more lines, put it away. Next week I'll do a few more. And I'll go through about a gram of cocaine in a month. And then I'll buy another gram next month. Now, for those of you that are on the channel who use cocaine, what's wrong with that story? I said, let me share with you how I do a gram of cocaine. I take my cocaine, I cut it into three piles, I put a spoon and a needle on the table, I do up the first third, I get my 3-minute ringer, then I go to the second third, I get my 3-minute ringer, and then I go to the third third, and I do that, and I get my 3-minute ringer. In less than 10 minutes, I got a gram of cocaine in my body, I'm squirting water in the spoon, what I call the wash, and I'm injecting water into my veins, thinking somehow, some way, I'm still going to get high on what's ever left in the spoon, and I'm hanging like dirt for another hit. That's how I do a gram, right? So our message that can hold and interest these addicted people. Remember, the newcomer comes to us because I can't stop. I will drink. I will use. I will act out again. And for me to drink, use, or act out is to die. And yet they meet us and they go, well, I don't do it anymore. Now, the first question is, well, are you like me? And we share the key message. You know what the key message is? Lack of control. That's really the depth and weight. If any one of us can control what we love to do, would we be listening to this dickweed speak for the last 90 minutes? I don't think so. We'd be out doing what we love to do, right? But we can't. And that's the depth and weight. And when we share that, the newcomer realizes, I'm like you, you're like me, but you don't do it anymore. And I want what you have. And that's the essence of a good story. Remember to carry the message, not the wreckage. We want to avoid drunkalogs and junky pride stories. I find it really annoying when someone goes up the front of the room in my fellowship, CA, and they start bragging about how bad they were and the awful things they did. I think, what? It baffles me. There's nothing I'm proud of about my drinking and using life. I did awful things. I'm not proud of it at all. I'll share enough to qualify. But more importantly, what my audience really wants to hear is the good news, right? Sometimes I'll say from the podium, how many here do not know how to drink, do not know how to use, do not know how to act out in their addictive pattern? Is there any novices here? Does anyone need more experience, more instruction? No hands go up because we're all experts in the problem, right? What the audience wants to hear, what the newcomer desperately wants to hear, the hope that there's a way out of their predicament. We want to avoid the Oprah Wine Fest, what I call the open, disgusting meetings, you know, where you just sit in sobriety, going insane, restless, irritable, discontented, group therapy without a therapist. So we want to carry a message, not the wreckage. Now, there's three ways to win the newcomer's confidence. Now, the first thing in our big book gives us very specific instructions on how we carry the message, how we share it. The first thing is we're ex-problem addicts, ex-problem drinkers. That's very compelling to someone who wants to stop but can't stop, and they meet you and you're an ex-problem addict. That's very compelling. Two, we have a solution. We got a recipe for recovery. We got a way out, the big book of Alcoholics Anonymous, and its amazing recipe of instructions. And lastly, we're properly armed with the facts about ourselves. We know what it means to be an addict. We know what it's like to live in that inescapable hole. And so those three elements come together in our share, in our story, wins the confidence of the newcomer. Yes, I want what this person has. I want what this fellowship offers in terms of my addiction, whether it be alcohol, drugs, or acting out. There are generally three types of share. There is a fourth share where you go to a topic meeting and then they pick a topic and they go around the room. Or sometimes they have miscellaneous topics. You pick a spoon or a straw or something and you have to share on the topic you pick. But generally there are introductions. This is a minute or less, right, where you're allowed to introduce yourself. And it's an opportunity in a minute or less to share something to the audience, to share something to the room. Sometimes we go around the room and we introduce ourselves. Most people go, hi, I'm Cameron, I'm an alcoholic. Hi, I'm Cameron, I'm an alcoholic. You know, that's okay. It's a minimum, but you could do so much more in that 1 minute. Then some people, like a chair of a meeting, might be asked to qualify. You got about 3 minutes here. There's no standard time, but generally about 3 minutes to qualify, to identify what earns you the right to chair this meeting. And then, of course, there's the main speaker sharing our hope, faith, and courage, our experience, strength, and hope. It could be 15 or 20 minutes. It could be 30 minutes. It could be 40 minutes or as long as 60 minutes. And so now, the thing about knowing your share and why I write my share down and why I know my share inside and out, which I know it so well that it allows me, when I do share, it seems very spontaneous. I can mix it up because I know the key messages. And sometimes, you know, I'll ask before I share, I go, how much time do I have to share? And they might say, oh, you got 30 minutes, but it's a medallion. and the medallion congratulations and accolades have gone on a little too long. And now I've only got 15 minutes to talk. Now I can deliver a talk in 15 minutes and still do my job, because I know which components to keep and which ones I have to discard based on the time frame. But if you put together a presentation and you're set on 30 minutes and all you got are 15, that's going to throw you off your game. So that's another reason why you want to know your presentation well, so you can be flexible depending on the amount of time they're going to give you. And like I said, it's often, it's usually a good idea to ask beforehand, you know, how much time am I expected to share for? So you have an idea what to structure in your presentation. Introducing ourselves. So when sharing at a meeting, how do you introduce yourself? Now, these are the different ones I've heard and some of them I use today. Hi, my name's Cameron. I'm an addict. You know, that's one way of sharing. Hi, my name's Cameron. I'm a recovering addict. That's my least favorite. I never share that. Hi, my name's Cameron. I'm a recovered addict. I will say that if I have the opportunity to define what I mean by it. Because sometimes, you know, I hear somebody, they just did their steps or 2 weeks sober, and they get to the podium and go, hi, my name is, and I'm a recovered addict. You know, like, come on. You know, like, what does that really mean? And so, you know, as a recovered addict, what it really means for me is I've been relieved by working my steps. I've been relieved of this obsession, this compulsion to drink, use, or act out every day of my life. And I've recovered from this seemingly hopeless state of mind and body. I've plugged into a power that lets me easily control my desire to drink, use, or act out. Now, that's a pretty good introduction in less than a minute. You know, you're identifying, you're explaining the problem, you're explaining the solution. Hi, my name is Cameron. I'm a member of CA. I use that a lot. I like being a member of CA, or even our big book talks about that. When you're asked to speak or share publicly, it's often best that members identify as a member of the program as opposed to anything else. I get why some people say, hi, I'm an alcoholic. I'm an addict. There's a certain identification to the newcomer that's there for the first time. Oh, I'm in the right place. But there's more we can do with that than the bare minimum. Another one of my favorites is, hi, my name's Cameron. I'm an alcoholic addict who doesn't drink or use. Now, that's an odd thing to hear. It's very paradoxical, too, because if you understand step one, we can't stop. We will drink and use again, yet there are a number of people in this room today that don't drink or use anymore, right? They are alcoholic addicts who don't drink, use, or act out anymore. That's a pretty extraordinary thing to say. And it grabs the attention. You don't hear it often. So it's a different introduction that grabs the attention of people. Or another way to say it, my name's Cameron, and I'm an addict who knows how to stop. That's another, because I don't know how to stop untreated. So I hear someone, I know how to stop. Oh, well, that's, how do you do that? And my favorite, especially when I'm a room full of old timers, a lot of blue hairs in the room, they haven't seen a newcomer in 20 years. And I go in and I go, hi, my name's Cameron. I'm an intelligent agent, spearhead of God's ever advancing creation. It's great to be here. And the old timers get kind of wound up with that. Who's he think he is? That sounds like a lot of ego. But it's right out of our big book, right? Page 49. Are we not intelligent agents, spearheads of God's ever advancing creation? I thought, yeah, I like that job description. I can identify with being that kind of a person. Introducing yourself, you can have a lot of fun. And in a minute or less, you can give some thought as to what you want to say that allows you to stand out as, hey, I've got an answer. I've got a solution. And reach the newcomers. And that newcomer goes, you know what? I'm like that person, but they've got something I don't have. And we can start them on that amazing journey. Qualifying as an addict. What qualifies you to share a message? Now, this is a 3 minute or so introduction or share. What are the facts about yourself? What can you say in 3 minutes or less that will persuade those in the meeting to say, yes, I'm like you, and you're like me, but you don't do it anymore. So when I'm asked to qualify, I say, hi, my name's Cameron. I'm an alcoholic addict who doesn't drink or use. And for some of you, that might sound rather, it's a paradoxical thing to say. Because for 26 years, from the age of 20 to the age of 46, I drank and used morning, noon, and night. I love the effect of alcohol and drugs on my body. I'll do anything for that. I love it more than everything. My kids, my wife, my own life. I love it more than my own life. I'll risk my own life for that amazing effect. And in the beginning, it seemed like the answer. Life was great. Oh, nothing but fun. But as the illness progressed, I started having fun with problems. And in the end, it was nothing but problems. And I reached a point where the unmanageability was so horrendous. I was so badly mangled in my domestic and professional life that I wanted to stop. I knew for years I needed to stop. But when I crossed the line and wanted to stop, then all that experimentation of trying this way to control it or stop it, that failed me. And realizing that horror of step one, I can't stop. I will drink and use again. And for me to drink and use again is to die. Yet as a member of Cocaine Anonymous, it's been 20 years since I've had any desire to drink or use. I can easily control my desire to drink and use because I met someone in these rooms armed with the facts about themselves, a common solution, the big book of AA, and a generosity of spirit as an ex-problem addict. And they showed me a way out. And life has been stellar ever since. Now that's 3 minutes or less. That's a good share. There's a lot of information that I've imparted there, right? And you can have a lot of fun in 3 minutes. So that's the qualifying share. And then finally, there's the main speaker share, whether it be 15, 20 minutes or up to an hour. So it breaks down into basically an opening, share what you used to be like, tell an effective war story, and win the newcomer's confidence. And I'll expand on the war story. As that one gentleman say, what should we share where we're not scaring the hell out of people? Share what happened, how you hit bottom, how you reached that turning point, found that jumping off place, that moment of clarity of how you found and worked a solution. 4, share what you're like today. Talk about the good news and what your life is like today, the promises fulfilled, how life has taken on a new meaning, how you found the fellowship that you crave. And then close your talk with your signature sign off. So, and the thing I want to say about this structure, you can mix it up. Very often I'll start with what I used to be. I'll start off with what my life is like now and give them the after picture first. And then I'll talk about what I used to be like. And then the main part of my share is what happened. So you can mix up the order. The opening and closing are in the right spot, but sharing what you were like, what happened, and what you're like today, you can mix up the order and have some fun with that format. So when you open your share, you want to introduce yourself. You can tell a humorous analogy or short story or cite a big book quote. These 3 different things. You could even use all 3 if you wanted to give some punch, to open your share with something a little different. So, you know, when I open up, I go, my name is Cameron. I'm an alcoholic addict, doesn't drink or use. And, you know, I have 2 different stories that I share. For those of you who've heard my share, I talk about the addict down in the hole and all the different elements of society that try to help the alcoholic out of the hole or the addict out of the hole. And there's an analogy, a story there that sets the tone for the meeting. That's one way you can open your share up with a short little story or analogy. You can also make a joke. You know, jokes are fun to open up. I just heard one the other day, a fellow that I worked with down in LA. I believe he's on the channel. I hope I don't mess it up, but he said this non-drinking, this alcoholic who's in sobriety, not drinking, goes into the bar and the bartender knows he's an alcoholic who isn't drinking at the moment. And he says, give me 2 shots of whiskey. So the bartender sets up 2 shots of whiskey, takes the first shot, throws it on the floor and drinks the second one. He says, give me 2 more. Bartender sets up 2 more shots. He takes the first shot, throws it on the ground, drinks the second shot. Says, give me another round. So he pours him another 2 drinks, takes the first drink, throws it on the floor and drinks the second shot. And then the bartender says, what are you doing? I thought you were an alcoholic. He says, yes, I am. But I was told never to touch the first drink. I know it's so corny, but you know, it's a fun way to open up. When I'm in, CA, by the way, that was that joke was compliments of Michael K from LA. There's another joke that I shared. It was a variation of an old alcoholic story. But when I'm in CA, I talk about a hard user and a real addict, real crackhead go to the dealer. And the dealer says, oh, man, you're not going to believe this, but I got this magic eight ball of crack cocaine. It's the blingiest bling. And here's the thing. No matter how much you chip off the eight ball, it never goes down in size. It lasts forever. What does the hard user say? I'll take one of those. But what does the real addict say? You better give me three. So, you know, you can have some fun with telling a humorous story or opening up with a joke. And big book quotes are fun. You know, I'm always emphasizing the whole point of sponsorship. The whole point of our program is to carry the message the addict still suffers, to become a sponsor. So, you know, I could open up with practical experience shows that nothing will so much ensure immunity from drinking, using, or acting out as intensive work with other addicts. It works when other activities fail. That's a good way to open up a share. One of my a speaker I've come to know recently is Richard E. from the UK. He's involved in one of the largest CA groups out there. And his favorite quote comes from page 95 of the big book. And all it is read this book. That's the quote. Read this book. And so, again, you can have some fun with your share and grab your audience's attention right off the hop. Okay, and then we get into the main part of what we used to be like. So what should we tell? How should we tell our war story? Now, the book gives us specific instructions on how to do that. Tell the newcomer enough about your drinking, your using, your acting out habits, symptoms, experiences, and encourage them to speak of themselves. So I share some stuff, they share some stuff. And then you tell them how baffled you were, how you finally learned that you were sick. And then give them an account of the failed strategies, the struggles you made to stop. Now, that's an important distinction, the struggles you made to stop. And show the newcomer how the mental twist, what I always say, how the mind lies to me, that always leads me to that first drink, first drug, or thought or act of another spree. And so, you know, one of the stories I like to tell, and you can bring something out of your story to illustrate each part. Like, and tell them enough about my drinking habits and symptoms. I was the king of substitution. When I couldn't use the needle and cocaine anymore, I switched to drinking. And when I became so alcoholic I couldn't drink anymore, I switched to marijuana. And I was constantly substituting. When any one particular drug or substance became problematic, I'd switch to pills, or I'd do this or do that. And eventually it always took me back to first love, which was cocaine and drinking bourbon. So that was what I was like. And, you know, I sobered up once for a year, very early on in my recovery. Then I sobered up again a few years later, 5 years later, for 9 months, because my wife got cancer and I sobered up for her convalescence. Then I had my first blackout about 4 or 5 years later. I never blacked out. And when I got a blackout, that scared the hell out of me. I sobered up for 90 days, but the sobriety time getting less and less and less. And I'm usually out for 4 or 5 years at a time. And it wasn't until 2003 that I finally said, enough's enough, I got to go. So, you know, that's a little bit about my behavior and my habits and symptoms. How I learned that I was sick. I went to a meeting, I used to work the financial district of Toronto. And, you know, I wore a 3-piece suit in those days. And the women were always dressed in their finest attire. And on a Friday night, there'd always be some swank soiree going on at some luxurious condominium. And I'd go there on a Friday night and everyone's drinking and doing lines of cocaine. This is the mid 80s. So I'm sitting on the sofa and this guy says to me, Cameron, you want to do a few lines? I said, I'd love to do a few lines. So as he's cutting me out the lines, I take my suit jacket off. I roll up my sleeve. My arms are just full of track marks. And I put a spoon and a needle on the coffee table and I start mixing up a hit. And the party stopped. It went dead quiet. The hostess came and said, what are you doing? I said, I'm going to do my lines. She says, you can't shoot up like some junkie at our little party here. I said, what? You're judging me on my delivery system? Is that what we're doing? And I was politely escorted to the door. And as I'm leaving, I'm thinking, I don't use like these people. And I was realizing there was something different about me. You know, that's always, you know, and I think all of us addicts have that, because in the beginning, it was a lot of fun, but then problems started to happen. And we hit that moment and we realized there's something not right about me. And then all the different ways I tried to sober up and stop or control it, controlled using. I'm just here for a gram. Resolutions, oaths, promises, trying to sober up for my wife, my kids, going to meetings, having a sponsor, you know, listening to poetry, you know, pitiful and incomprehensible demoralization. None of these strategies kept me sober. I kept failing because my mind loves the effect of alcohol and drugs, and there's a liar that always wins the argument. Now, most addicts can relate to that what I used to be like story. So you can have a lot of fun with that, you know, in telling your story. And that's about the extent I go. I don't belabor the junkie pride. I don't talk about how much I used and, you know, one horrifying it. You know, I tell one pitiful, incomprehensible, demoralizing experience. I used to share needles and I was irresponsible. I'd leave my needles laying around the house and I'd wake up and find my 4-year-old son playing squirt guns with a dirty needle. That's awful. But that's about as far as I go. I'll share one example. I won't belabor it with other examples. And I got lots of those examples in my using life, but I don't share them all. One's enough to convey this is how bad it got. This is how mangled I was becoming. What happened? Tell them exactly what happened to you and stress the spiritual feature freely. Because remember, our 12-step program is a spiritual moral approach to the efficacy of addiction. Describe your last bottom, that jumping off place, that turning point, that moment of clarity. You know, October 31st, 2003, I decided I can't do this anymore. I was fishing for brown trout. I caught two that day, about 18 inches. And it's a beautiful October day. I'm drinking cold Corona beer and I'm smoking $400 an ounce dope. And I'm miserable inside and out. I thought, I can't go on like this. I got to go a different way. And I remember going home to my wife and telling her I'm going to go into the rooms of AA and sober up. And I remember her sobbing, just sobbing. And I thought, man, I have done so much damage. It was really an awful moment watching her sob that way. Now, my sobriety date is November 21st, not October 31st. Why? Because on November 20th, I got invited to the food show in Toronto where they were doing beers from around the world. And you got a little taste of a beer in a communion cup. Now, those of you that have ever taken communion, communion's a very tiny little cup. So it's not even a sip. And I thought, well, what's a sip of beer? But of course, when you drink 400 sips, that has a certain effect on you. So my sobriety date is November 21st, 2003. You talk about how you found your sponsor. I dried out in the rooms in sobriety for 8 months. I was homicidal by 8 months sobriety. And I remember sharing some awful things in the room. And I thought, if this is what my life is going to look like, I'd rather drink. So I was going out to drink and a guy grabbed me and says, Cameron, I'm watching you die. Let me show you how to work a program. And he saved my life. He showed me. He was armed with the facts. He had a solution. He was an ex-problem. I knew this guy. I'd never seen him sober. And he got my attention. And he showed me how to work it. You know, share your experience about attending meetings and how and when you started your step work. You know, it might surprise some of the people on the channel. I didn't work with my first newcomer until June of 2005. Now, I sobered up in 2003. I learned the program in 2004, but I didn't work with my first newcomer till 2005. Why? Because I remember I just would go to the meetings and my sponsor called me and said, what are you doing, Cameron? Why aren't you working with anybody? I said, nobody's asking me. And he said, look, you get into a prayer meditation with God right now. Ask God if you're spiritually fit to put a newcomer in front of you. And so I went to a meeting that night and this woman comes up to me before the meeting starts. My very first prospect was a woman. She said, I'm a hopeless alcoholic. I've been sober 3 days. I want you to help me. And that was that's how quickly I started working with others. And I got involved in service work. I've started groups. I've been GSR. I've been secretary. I've been the World Archive chair for CA. I'm currently a delegate for our online service area. The archive is for Southern Ontario. I build websites. I can make a computer pretty much do anything. So I built the world website for CA, some 35 other area websites. I love doing service. It's the icing on the cake, but the baseline of everything is always carrying the message the addict still suffers. So what we're like today, talk about the promises, talk about, this is really the important part. And so often I've heard a share goes on for 40 minutes of war story. And then the person in the last minute goes, and then I came into the rooms of AA and everything got well. And that's it. That's all we know about what they're like today. Talk about the promises. Talk about how your health, your family, your work life has changed. Share about the fellowship that you have found. I've found fellowship in a lot of different 12-step programs out there. I got friends in AA, CA, NA, Al-Anon, CODA, SLA, you know, OA. I've become friends with so many people. It's a great fellowship, a fellowship I crave, of recovered members sharing their experience and strength and hope with others. My liver went back to normal after 6 years. I rebuilt my relationship. My wife and I celebrate 34 years of marriage this year. I have a relationship with my children, who are 37 and 39, that I really adore and love. It is a program that just keeps giving. It's a stellar life being able to plug into this power that at minimum lets me easily control my desire to drink, use, or act out. And the maximum is unlimited. Like, it just keeps on giving. It really is extraordinary. And then a signature sign off, close off. You can close off with a short story, an analogy, or another, you know, big book quote. Those of you who've heard my share, I talk about the guy in the hole, the addict in the hole, the family can't help them, the friends can't help them, the employer can't help them, medical community doesn't seem to help them, the treatment centers don't work. And then I talk about the good news and bad news, that there is a way out of the hole. And at the end of my presentation, I go back to the guy in the hole. And I said, next time you hear someone crying out for help in the hole, what should we do? Well, we jump into the hole with them. And they're bewildered. Now we're both in the hole. But I can turn to the untreated addict with a wink in my eye and say, I've been here before. I got a way out for more experience, strength, and hope, a way out to walk hand in hand with the sunlight of the spirit, a way out to be an intelligent agent, a spearhead of God's ever advancing creation. And I close my talk like that. That's a strategy called looping. If you ever watch a Seinfeld episode on Netflix, they open with a series of stories at the beginning, then all the content is poured in through the episode, and at the end of the episode they close all the loops and finish off the story. That's what made Seinfeld such an interesting series to watch. It's called, in presentations, it's called looping, and it can create a lot of, you know, a nice dynamic to your presentation. But a short story at the end, an analogy, a big book quote, they all work. And this brings us almost to the close. I just want to make one more appeal that if you like what we've taught here, I'm going to post the slideshow along with the audio that's been recorded on the website for your benefit. If you want to support our work we do here, we use PayPal. You can go to CA Service Sponsorship. There's a 7th donation tab, and you know, your donation of 20 or 10 or 5, whatever you can afford, it helps us offset our Zoom costs and our website costs, and we certainly appreciate your generosity. So in conclusion, I look forward to hearing your share or talk at the next 12-step recovery meeting. So if you've got something coming up, you'd send me an email or drop me a text. I'd love to come hear you. I'll also offer this out too. You can I'll post my details in the chat. And if you want, if you've got an upcoming presentation and you want to work on it, give me a shout. You can present to me. I'll set up a Zoom link. You can present to me. I'll record it. I'll send you the full recording back, both visual and audio. And you can critique your own presentation, make modifications, call me back up, and we can do it again. And I'll work with you at developing your story. And that would be a lot of fun to do. And I'm certainly open to doing that with any and all of you here today. And lastly, please consider supporting our efforts with a 7th donation. And that is how to carry the message, not the wreckage.